The Cinema Specialists are back, and today we are talking about Eternals and Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. Yes, people asked and they received. Finally, talking about Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. I know that was a very popular movie from this year, and when John and I were looking today, we were like, what movie should we do? Or not today, obviously, but this week, we were like, what movie should we do with Eternals? And nothing really came out. And when we saw the Oscar nominations, I said either The Boy and the Heron or Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. And Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse was a hell of a lot easier to track down and watch from the comfort of my home. So I watched Into the Spider-Verse and Across the Spider-Verse. You get to hear me talk about both of those things. And lucky all of you, you'll actually get to hear me talk positively about Marvel movies. But they're like in association with Marvel. Anyway, Eternals is what we're starting with. And boy, oh boy, am I not going to talk positively about this movie. Nope, not going to do it. John, you'd seen Eternals before.
I have.
What the heck?
And when I first saw it, I saw it after it came out. I Eternals is actually the only MCU movie since I've moved back to Civilization that I haven't seen that I didn't see in theaters.
Uh-huh.
I watched it here. So it was a lot. It was after it was released on Disney Plus. I watched it at home with some friends. And a lot of, obviously, when Eternals came out, there was so much negativity towards the movie. And I sat down coming out of it and was like, you know what? I think I enjoyed that more than most people did. Mm-hmm. And when I rewatched it yesterday, I still feel that way. But this is the most frustrating MCU movie we have watched to date, and possibly after this, that we will ever watch. Because this movie has so many good ideas that are just executed so poorly.
So I was going to say, this movie has a lot of potential, which I think is ultimately why I gave it one star. Like, The Incredible Hulk didn't have potential. Age of Ultron was just bad. This movie has so much potential. And yet it did nothing.
Yeah.
It did nothing with it. I mean, the idea... Okay, first of all, I just want to talk about the idea of this movie, right? The fact that there are Eternals, these beings that have existed forever, who can... have essentially been there to try to increase the population so that these things can be born, whatever, blah, blah, blah. They help with technology. They help with all this. I love that. I think that's good. Right? I'm a fan of that idea. And that's where my compliments for this movie stop. That's it. That's the end of my compliments, because you get an idea like that and you put that in the hands of a serious sci-fi director and you actually direct a real science fiction movie. Isn't that what we all think about, right? Like, how did the pyramids get built? How did these amazing works of just architecture happen back during a time when like this stuff shouldn't have been able to happen? How did this happen? And this movie kind of gives an answer to it, or wants to pretend to give an answer to it, and it just doesn't do anything.
It does. Yeah. That's the big problem with this movie, is that there's so much potential. There's so many interesting aspects of the story, but the cast is too large. So it doesn't even get a focus on enough of them that we really feel connected. We don't get a focus on their relationships with one another. We don't get to see anything that really happens in the third act, which I'll admit is kind of better than most MCU third acts.
Yeah, I mean, all the characters do their blah, blah, blah. That's really all that
happens. Yeah, I mean, they all do their blah, blah thing, and they all, like, there's a fight scene and stuff, and it's fine. It's whatever. It's not the worst, but I just want to care about these characters. And you, there's so much focus on the relationships these characters have with each other and how much they mean, but they never establish them.
No, you know what? There's a lot of focus on with these movie in this movie. There's a lot of focus on what makes them different. What makes them, air quote, unique. Did you guys know that there's a deaf Eternal? Which, first of all, I won't even get into how that doesn't even make sense, considering this is an android being created. So I just, and like, I have problems with that right off the bat. But there's
the realism of it, Phil.
What'd you say?
It's easier to believe that way, that they aren't cyborgs or whatever they are.
Yeah, but here's the thing.
Black rooms, I suppose, is the way to put it.
Yeah, then you have a child one. Then you have the Indian one. Then you have the black one. Then you have, I felt like that's what they were highlighting the entire movie. It's like... Yeah. Highlight their actual relationships. Highlight what they're actually doing. And I know we get into Barry Keoghan's a little bit with again, I'm just calling her the deaf one, but that's literally how they like define her this entire movie. It's just, I felt like they focused so much on that stuff, as Disney has done, unfortunately, in some of their more recent movies, where it's like, look, guys, we're being representative. Look at us. But they're doing it so half-assed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, we're giving you representation. However, we're doing it in the way that we think you should want to see it, not in a way that actually is like realistic and cool and like authentic and all of that. Like, it's just, to me, it was just nonsensical. And like, we for our $10 patrons on Thursday, we have our American Fiction podcast coming out, $10, $20 patrons, because we're doing our best picture breakdown over on Patreon. And like, American Fiction nails it with like this whole idea of like this kind of fake diversity, this whole idea of it's coming from the point of view of people who don't actually have your best intentions in mind, but are pretending they do so that they can sell things. So Disney felt like they were doing with Eternals. It's like you were watching the Power Rangers and it's like, which one's your favorite one? And you, when you would say what your favorite Power Ranger is, you were literally just like, oh, I like the pink one. Like, that's how this felt. It felt like the only thing I knew about these characters was this sounds so wrong, but it's the thing that didn't make them like your typical white character. And I thought that was stupid. There is so much more to these characters that you could have done with these characters and built off of these characters. And instead it was just very bleh.
I agree. And again, I gave this movie 2 stars because I like it more than the lower echelons of the MCU films. I did move Captain Marvel down to 2 stars because I
wow.
When I watched this movie, I was like, I like this movie more than Captain Marvel, but I can't give it 2.5 stars because it has potential and doesn't capitalize on it.
Yeah.
Captain
Marvel had no potential.
No. It's so frustrating watching these characters and then just getting like exposition as to why they relate to each other instead of actually just seeing it flesh out, especially when we have these flashback scenes to them through history, which should be the coolest part of this movie. And it kind of is sometimes.
Yeah.
But I want to see them interacting with each other. I don't want some montage of Cersei and Icarus just like, you know, deciding that they're getting married all of a sudden. That is literally the least interesting part of this entire movie. There are so many characters here that I just wanted to see fleshed out, but they don't get there.
Yeah.
That shouldn't happen in a 2.5 hour long movie.
No. And again, it's like how Marvel and stuff will just put all of their effort and their time and their money behind like CGI and nonsense and stuff. And it's like, but what is it about these characters that makes me want to watch them come back for another movie? Because this is one that also feels very side, you know, it doesn't feel like it's important to the main storyline of the MCU that we've seen so far. Even though I know like, oh, it's got stuff with Thanos and we're going to hear all that. But like, why bring this in at this point? I don't understand. I want to know the beginning. I want to know the end. It doesn't make sense to me.
Okay. So there are a few things to discuss when it comes to that. There's, first and foremost, the non-intervention during the whole Thanos thing. We get this like one little line in the scene where we were told not to. That is the dumbest explanation ever. Mm-hmm. Makes no sense. Doesn't give us the motivations these characters have for the rest of it. Right? Because the entire purpose of this movie is they want humanity to live. Mm-hmm. So, okay, whatever. Fine. Do you remember which movies we have already seen Celestials in the MCU?
No, but I know we saw Gemma Chan already.
Yeah, well, that's not the point I'm trying to make, Phil. And I am fine with seeing Gemma Chan whenever they want to.
I have no idea.
Kurt Russell's character in Guardians of the Galaxy 2 is a Celestial. Nowhere in the Guardians of the Galaxy movies where they go, where the Collector lives and stuff, is in the hollowed out husk of a Celestial. Celestials have already been introduced into the MCU. And this plays into the cosmic realm that they were deciding to expand into in subsequent phases. Why? I don't know. Why they decided this group of Eternals, like the Earth group of Eternals, instead of some of the other Eternals who are way more interesting, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I really like the way this movie looks. I hate to say it. And I, when I first saw it, I was like, I'm not a big fan of Chloe Zhao's directing. Like, I get what she's trying to do. But man, after watching all these MCU movies back to back to back, it almost feels like a breath of fresh air.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely looks good. Better than the others, for sure. I mean, some of these...
They filmed things outside, Phil.
I know. They really like to lay into that, huh?
Yeah, they really do.
I mean, my goodness. Congratulations. You went outside and shot a movie. Sorry. I don't know, man. Like, maybe it looked good, but to me, I gave this 1 star. Like, I really did. I gave this 1 star. The only part that I actually thought was genuinely interesting was the Richard Madden reveal that he was, like, bad or just, like, so committed to, you know, what his programming was. I thought that was kind of cool, but then that defeats the purpose of how come they can, like, show love and things like that if he can't even fight his programming to save them. It just feels nonsensical.
Well, it didn't seem like it was him fighting his program. It was him actually, like, believing in his mission and stuff, right? But that's the problem with the movie is that it doesn't flesh that out. And even if we look at it, the heart of this movie should be a philosophical debate. Is it worth sacrificing humanity so that billions of other life forms can be created? And it's mentioned in the movie. There are a couple of discussions about it. But we never get to a point where people are like philosophically debating what is the best approach here. And it all comes just like, well, we've been here and we kind of like these people, so we don't want them to die.
I was just going to say, there's no interesting human characters. And that's what the problem is. Because without having any interesting human characters, the story and the filmmakers aren't good enough at creating empathy for the humans on this fake Earth who would be killed.
Yes.
You know, like, that's the problem.
It relies on us knowing the MCU and knowing the human characters and caring about it. Because
and I don't. At this point, I feel like half of them are dead anyway.
Well, it's only like 4 of them, but whatever.
Half the interesting ones.
One of them's just an old guy. But it's just, you can't have human characters because there are too many characters in this movie already.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, we get this introduction of Kit Harington's character at the beginning, who's a complete nothing. And it's just like this setup for something. It doesn't even play into Gemma Chan's character at all. And the fact that her ex-boyfriend, who she was in a relationship or married to for 5 millennia, came back, right? Like, nothing. Also, they throw out the term 5,000 years a lot in this movie, and none of the timeline lines up.
No, they just want round numbers, man. That's all that is.
Yeah. It's like, we beat all the deviants 5,000 years ago. Cut to this scene from the 14th century.
Okay, good. That's what I was thinking, too, because it was literally like none of this stuff. They had said that numerous times, and then throughout, they would just show these deviants at different parts. And I'm like, wait, I thought they were wiped out and had not been back for 5,000 years. I thought that it was taken care of for 5,000 years, and that's why it was able to continue building up. Not, oh, we fought them and kept them at bay for 5,000 years. You literally said they don't exist for 5,000 years.
Yeah, that didn't happen. I was like, hey, hold up. We have some continuity errors here within this movie. This is something someone reading the script should have been like, that's not right.
Yeah. And that's an easy fix. I mean, that's just like, hey, like we've, like I said, all you have to do is say we kept them at bay for 5,000 years. We didn't destroy, but they actually use the words of like, they haven't existed for 5,000 years.
Yeah, exactly. It's the frustrating parts about this movie where it just feels like they didn't care enough about it.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's like, oh, we're making this movie. Look at this cast.
Like, oh, it's this loaded. Cast,
it's completely loaded. And like, even if we ignore the Game of Thrones of it all, which kind of weird in 2021, but I guess this movie was made before that.
Also really funny though, because it's like Jon Snow and Kit Harington. Like, that's just funny that they chose those two as well.
That they have Kit Harington, Richard Madden, of course. Kumail Nanjiani is hilarious. I love Kumail Nanjiani. I think he's so funny. Ever since I first saw him in like Portlandia,
Mm-hmm.
And he does really well. Brian Tyree Henry has been nominated for an Academy Award at this point. Barry Coogan's mm-hmm. been nominated for Academy Awards. Unfortunately, we don't get enough of them.
Yeah, they're very much the background characters of the bunch.
Yeah. Ma Dong-seok is phenomenal in this film as Gilgamesh. Don't get enough of him whatsoever. Don't get enough of his relationship with Angelina Jolie, also an Academy Award winner.
Yeah. They just mentioned that they like each other, right? Like, that's the extent of it.
Yeah. And it's just wild that you have this massive cast. Jebba Chan's phenomenal. Selma Hayek's also great, kind of wasted in this movie.
She's not in enough of it. Yeah.
No. And then there's Leah McHugh.
So bad, dude. My God, she's so horrible. Bad. I'm not going to sit here and like insult a child, but why did she get this role? I don't get it.
It just felt like they decided they wanted someone who fit the character appearance and didn't care about the quality of acting.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. what's worse, the way Sprite is written in this movie is terrible.
Yeah. Yeah, the Sprite character seemed like a waste. And like now I'm sitting here wondering, and it's like, okay, so if they're going to continue to be in these movies, right? Like if these characters come back, as it says, Eternals will return. What do I care about any of them who are returning?
Yes.
You know what I'm asking? Like, I don't understand what it is that I'm supposed to care about their storylines after watching this movie moving forward.
And that's the thing is we get to the end of this movie. The interesting ones get taken away. Mm-hmm. And that's not true. Barry Coogan's still there. And we all love Barry Coogan, so it's fine.
Yeah, but his character's still not all that interesting.
He could be. Like, he's never what going. If he is? What if the entire Eternals 2 is just Barry Coogan the entire time? Are then we really going to complain?
Me, that's all.
Oh, no.
Yep.
But, yeah, I mean, probably. It's just, you're right. How do we care about these characters? Because we weren't even given enough time to emotionally invest with them.
Mm-hmm.
We were going to, even Cersei, Gemma Chan's character, who is the closest thing we have to a primary protagonist in this entire story,
mm-hmm.
isn't developed enough.
Yeah.
We don't understand why she likes humans so much. We mm-hmm. get a couple of scenes of her interacting with them in the past. And of course she's like teaching and stuff. But we don't ever get that moment of like, this is, I can't believe I'm about to say this, but what this movie was really lacking was, this is why humans are worth fighting for.
Yeah. I know. Who would have thought? I feel like those are like the staples of these Marvel movies, but yeah, there really was no, cause to have not a single human character involved in this movie. And then when you look at the movies that came before this, what are the ones? It was Black Widow. What did we do last week?
Shang-Chi.
We don't have enough of a connection with those characters. So like what's fresh in our mind at this point are characters that like, we're not sitting here going, oh my God, what if like Shang-Chi dies while this.
Yeah.
Like, nobody cares. No one cares. Like, and that really is a problem. And the stakes mm-hmm. never feel real. And then the other problem is you have these aren't real humans.
Yeah.
So because they're not human, because they're just like created androids or whatever they are, it's like, okay, you created these to do whatever. You're going to give them fake emotions, which seems like a lot of effort, but okay. And now we've watched them have fake emotions. We haven't connected with them. We don't have a human character to latch onto the same, you know, like the same way we've seen a lot of these other movies. And yet I'm supposed to care about them and their plight and also care about the human race that they're supposedly going to save that we all know they're going to save anyway. It just, I don't know, man. I agree.
One of those
movies where I was like, why did we keep going through the Marvel Cinematic Universe at this point? You know?
I don't completely disagree. Like I said, there are moments that I like it. I don't mind a lot of the dialogue in this movie. Sprite's dialogue's terrible. That's besides the point because Sprite just like says what's happening. And it's like, shut up, Sprite. We can see what's happening. This is a movie.
It's Basil exposition.
Yeah, exactly. But why was there no I don't understand how you get to this point in the movie, but an hour in when we find out what the Celestials and Arishem are planning, right? And the whole purpose of the Eternals. There's not even a moment where they're like, oh, I guess I'm not even real. We don't get that, like, very...
We get a very small beat of that. Very small.
But, like, we don't even have it... It's not even to a point where it motivates Icarus to behave the way he behaves. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, there should be fracturing. And it comes too early in the movie.
Yeah.
It comes before we even understand these characters, which, again, an hour into a movie, we should understand these characters. But because it happens so early, and there's so much movie after it, it just kind of feels like we get to a MacGuffin point, you know, where we're just chasing something for the sake of chasing something. We're getting the gang back together. Then we're going being the bad guy. That's what it feels like. Instead of doing these flashbacks, or maybe do these flashbacks to reveal information, right? Give us that exposition through flashbacks where it's like, and they do it when it shows that Icarus goes and kills Selma Hayek's character. But it's too late at that point because they haven't established that with the rest of these flashbacks.
Yeah. No, I agree. I feel like there's too many things going on in those flashbacks that I don't have enough information to really care what's happening in those flashbacks. Like you said, when they go back in time to these different time periods and stuff, that could be some of the coolest stuff in these movies. Mm-hmm. And they just decide not to. They just decide to like focus on the smaller relationships that, again, we don't know anything about, or on these little moments, or on like a random fight scene where somebody moves fast and somebody uses brain powers and somebody is like, okay. Also, like, if you were this guy, wouldn't you just make them all have kind of like the same powers so that they could do like the same amount of destruction to this thing? Like, why give them each their own unique power?
Yeah, that
they can all look different, and then they just beat them up the same way. Like, none of them really even have that good of a power to kill the deviants.
No, I mean, the one guy shoots like energy balls. That's kind of good at killing. And one guy has laser eyes. One guy's literally just Superman.
So why not just give them all laser eyes?
I don't know. I'm not a celestial being. That's,
I'm just saying. Like, just
why do they have to plant their eggs in planets? Like, it makes no sense. How does,
well, the planting of the eggs in planets, they said, so that humanity will like give them the energy they need to birth it.
But how? What is this life force? There's no investigation into the life force that, like, sentient beings produce that makes it so these things can hatch. It's these little things that needed to be investigated more in this movie to make it make more sense. And then, you know what? Don't reveal the fact that there's sinister plans and they've been tricked their entire existences until like the last half hour of the movie. Gets a lot more interesting.
Yeah.
Focus on the deviants for a bit, because do you know Bill Skarsgård plays the deviant in this movie?
Yeah, I did. I saw it when his name came up at the end. That made me laugh.
Yeah, and it's like, cool. Why was he in like 5 minutes of this movie?
Yeah, why?
Why didn't we build a villain to get to a point where then Icarus is the villain, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it didn't make sense if you plot it out. Like, it doesn't make sense how you built this film in order for it to actually be good. And maybe that's the Chloe Zhao of it. I hate to say it. Maybe it's the Academy Award winning director that they have at the helm of this movie, because she also wrote this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's poorly written. Terrible. I don't want to talk about Eternals anymore if you're good to stop talking about Eternals.
No, I have to talk about one thing before we move on.
All right, go ahead. Get your last thing in.
Because in every subsequent podcast we have in the series, you're going to bring it up. So I'm just giving you the warning now. The giant alien life form in the Indian Ocean, never mentioned again.
Wait, what? Say that. Wait, which giant Indian?
Like the celestial that they turned into rock in the middle of the ocean.
Yeah. Never mentioned. Yes. Yeah. Well, never, you don't need that. Because again, this is a standalone movie that they're just trying to pretend is actually a part of the universe.
But that's almost what I enjoyed about this movie, is that it didn't have to be an MCU movie.
Well, that's what makes it bad, though, because then they did make it an MCU movie.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. That's true. There's so much potential here. Every one of these Eternals have a name associated with some sort of deity. And for some reason, our flashbacks didn't show that Eternal interacting with that civilization.
Yeah, I know. I did think that was funny, too.
And I'm like, there's so many logical ways to approach this movie. And it just feels like they decided I'm not logically going to approach this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, let's jump over to Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse.
Oh, yeah.
All right, let's do it. So I actually had to watch Into the Spider-Verse and Across the Spider-Verse this week because I hadn't seen either of them. And I was like, John, do I need to watch Into the Spider-Verse to do Across? And you were like, yes. And then I watched Into and I was like, thank God I watched this movie. Otherwise, I'd have no idea what was going on. When these trailers and stuff came out and when people were giving the reviews on these movies, I was like, oh, you know, it's just like superhero fans who are just excited by like flashy animation. I mean, Chris Miller and Phil Lord are so good. At these kinds of movies. I mean, we've seen them do it over and over again throughout their entire career. And then I watched the first one and I was like, all right, I get the hype. I get it. The first one's great. Like the first one blew me away. I was like, damn, the animation's great. The story's great. The way they intertwine all of this, it's amazing. The second one starts off that way. And then it loses me a little bit towards the end because I think it gets a little too complicated for its own good. And I don't like that. For 2 hours and 20 minutes of watching Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, I am a little bummed that we don't get a more clear conclusion. Because I understand ending on the cliffhanger. I'm all about ending on the cliffhanger. But we really don't get a conclusion to any of the storylines in this 2 hours and 20-something minutes. So that was my biggest complaint. Overall, it looks amazing. The story's good. The characters are good. Like, I really enjoyed both of these. Because I had to watch them. I enjoyed Into the Spider-Verse significantly more than Across the Spider-Verse, though. Although I am very much excited to watch whatever the next movie in this franchise is going to be.
Beyond the Spider-Verse.
They got to stop with these stupid titles for Spider-Man movies. They need to stop.
They have really bad titles for Spider-Man movies,
It's too hard to keep track.
But it is. It is, especially when they're over different, like, they're different styles and everything like that now at this point. But I'm really glad that you watched Into the Spider-Verse because it is really necessary before you see this movie see that one. You have to, because there's so much character development. And Miles is such a fascinating character when it comes to just these comic book characters in general. I mean, listeners, Phil gave Into the Spider-Verse 4 stars.
It's the only Marvel movie that I've given 4 stars thus far.
And no, it's
not. I gave Across the Spider-Verse 3 stars, but you know, like I said, that was more because of the second half of it. Just kind of drove me crazy. I know Tatiana Marano edits says there's going to be a part 2 to the movie. Like, I know that, but it's still, it's kind of like how I felt about Dune Part 1, where I'm like, I can't rate this as a full movie because it's not a full movie.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of people didn't realize Across the Spider-Verse was a part 1 of 2.
Yeah.
So a lot of people came out of that movie being like, what do you mean? I had a
kid. I didn't know that. Side.
I contemplated telling you, and then I was like, we're going to get Phil's raw reaction to this.
Yeah, let me just do it on my own.
When I saw this in theaters, I had this terribly rambunctious kid sitting beside me who were like getting up and running to the other side of the theater to talk to their friends and stuff like that. Had to give them the good teacher stare, and they stopped after that. But
still got it.
Kid terrified of me. Turns beside me is like, do you know when the next one's coming out? And I'm like, nope, it'll come eventually.
But we know when it's coming out?
It was delayed.
Oh, okay.
I think it was supposed to be this year. I think it's been pushed back to next year, or it might be like late this year. But it was supposed to be early this year, but it's been delayed. There's a lot of controversy around these movies at the moment.
Why?
The overworking of the animators. Specifically in Across the Spider-Verse was a lot.
I could imagine. I mean, the animation on both of those movies is absolutely incredible. I really like what they did in Across the Spider-Verse when Gwen Stacy is talking to her father and how they do the background of the room and how it like melts or it's crying or it gets really plain in the room. Like those little details of like the different comic book styles that they're doing throughout are really, really incredible. So yeah, I'm not surprised at all that there's an overworking of the animators on these movies, because these movies are so insanely detailed. You're not going to get that a lot of the time, especially for this long of a movie and everything. Yeah, I could see why this is getting pushed back, because this might take a year and a half to make.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, let's get into the movie a little bit more here. And it's really interesting that we're talking about kind of these two ensemble movies at the same time, and we can really contrast Eternals with something like Across the Spider-Verse, which has this huge host of characters. Again, the cast in this movie is spectacular. Just with all the voice talents and everything, but the way this movie handles its characters, where it understands you already know Miles, but you're still going through this journey for Miles, and the Miles' journey really anchors this film. It's real fascinating watching him and him reacting to the knowledge he is given throughout the movie. But there's so much focus also on Gwen, who was a side character in the first movie, but now almost feels like a kind of like a co-lead with Miles in this movie.
Yeah, she's much bigger character in the second. I mean, the first 20 minutes of the movie are dedicated to her.
Yes.
We don't even see Miles for the first 20 minutes. When they finally do the credits, we're 20 minutes in, and it's all dedicated to Gwen Stacy.
Yeah. And she's great. Like, this character's just so well written. We really understand her. We understand what she went with when her Peter died. And how that is her canon event. Is that what they call it in this movie?
Yeah, I really liked how they got into the canon events in this movie, of like where they reversed it on that one where it was Peter who died rather than Gwen, when really it's normally Gwen instead of Peter. I like how Miles interrupts a canon event, which is what sets everything off, and we hear about this. I like that, like, those canon events are known things throughout the community, throughout the Spider-Verse, because that really adds you know, a level of like meta that works though in these types of movies, because they're in on the meta. It's not just meta for our sake, it's meta for the character's sake too.
Yeah, and again, it adds to that character development they build in this movie, and how, why it stands out as opposed to even MCU movies, but just other animated films in general, is the respect they give all of these characters and the knowledge they have them. They aren't afraid to make characters naive, but they don't result in making them stupid at the same time, right? Like, they're still there, they're doing everything, and they are building themselves into characters who are fleshed out, have human emotions that the audience can relate to. And there's never a point where anything feels like a caricature. Even the characters that are more ridiculous don't feel like caricatures.
Yeah, I agree. And there's quite a few characters in this movie who do feel a little bit more ridiculous. You know, I mean, obviously in the first one with Peter Porker, I mean, that's just funny. Yeah. But like, it really does lean into why these different Spider-Men exist in the different universes, like why on the different Earths, what the sentient beings are and how they, you know, coexist, but how there are these moments that happen to every single one of them. And it starts to build up where we realize, like, okay, so Miles's dad is probably going to end up dying because he's about to get named captain. And that's why that's such an important plot point at the beginning of the movie, but it kind of does a good job of hiding why that's such an important plot point until the time comes. And then that's why too, the big reveal when Gwen finds out her dad quit the job, She's got the realization like her dad's not going to be the one who dies.
Yeah. It's just such a heavy moment in an animated movie. Like, I feel like we've gotten to a point that we have a lot more respect for this medium of film now than we've had in the past.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the times people look at animated movies and they say they're for children. And of course, we're going to have to
detract. Pixar really changed that.
They did, in the West. And I think it's really important to specify in the West.
Yeah.
Because there are some pretty heavy Japanese animated movies.
And like, I mean, even the Studio Ghibli movies. I mean, you're talking like...
Yeah.
What's it... what was their first one? Why can I not think? Nausicaa and the Valley. Yeah. Like, that... Nausicaa's great. Super dark. Yeah.
And like, we're at a point now where we can have these films that are animated and are also just well-constructed movies. And people are more accepting of them now. And we see that, although we don't see it with like Best Picture noms very often. What was the last animated movie to be nominated for Best Picture?
Has there been one since Toy Story 3?
I don't know.
That might be the last one.
So it was 2010?
That would be it. Yeah, that's the only one. It's Beauty and the Beast, Up, and Toy Story 3.
Wow. So three. In the history of cinema, three animated films have been nominated for Best Picture.
I am surprised Across the Spider-Verse didn't get a nomination, but I think had this been a weaker year, I think it would have.
I agree. I think this year is just too strong. I don't know how I would feel about Across the Spider-Verse getting a nom with Into the Spider-Verse not getting one, though.
People on Letterboxd, I think Letterboxd actually has Across the Spider-Verse with a higher rating, which I was a little surprised at. I feel like Into the Spider-Verse is a little bit more... I just feel like Into the Spider-Verse is more well done. And when I look at like Across the Spider-Verse, I don't necessarily like have major problems with the movie, but I definitely see its flaws a little bit more. And maybe it's because I watched it so close to Into the Spider-Verse, and Into the Spider-Verse just kind of blew my mind a little bit, that maybe that's why I was a little bit more let down by the second one. But right. I thought for sure Into the Spider-Verse would be like the creme de la creme of animated movies over there on Letterboxd. I was surprised.
Yeah. Who knows? Who knows what Letterboxd people are thinking, though?
Yeah,
that's all true. Over the place.
Yeah.
Barbie now has a higher rating than Parasite does, so...
No. It's the most watched movie.
Okay, good.
It's the most watched. It only has a 3.9, but it's more watched than Parasite. That's all that is.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. Yeah. But Letterboxd, weird place sometimes.
Yeah.
But you should follow us on there.
We mention
movies all the time.
Hello. We're here to talk. I do want to point out, though, you had mentioned that these movies, like, you know, they're animated, but then they also have really strong stories. I think what I'm most impressed with both of these movies is that the animation is spectacular, and they don't forego having a compelling, heartfelt story involved in both movies along with the spectacular animation. Because sometimes in these types of movies, you can focus so much on how the animation is going to look that you forget to put the story and make the story as impactful as it is.
Yeah, and I think that's really important and something we've talked about in MCU films, where they focus too much on one aspect of the movie and not enough on the others. But these are movies that take the time to focus on character, and character is so important. These, even the new characters we're introduced to in this movie, and there are a lot. There are a lot
There's
of characters
a lot in these movies. One, man. There's a lot of new characters.
But you still feel like you know all of the characters, which is wild with how many there are. And yes, the animated, just using animation allows for a lot more of these like Easter eggs and stuff. You have so many different Spider-Men throughout this background scenes and everything. And they're great Easter eggs to throw in there. You have Donald Glover showing up in this movie.
Donald Glover. Yeah.
It's these little things that really elevate it. But at the core, this movie is about these characters and their desire. It's the Spider-Man watcher, right? Like, with great power comes great responsibility. Yeah. And if you have great responsibility, how can you let these people die?
And the one complaint I had with the second one, because as we're thinking about this, like, great power, great responsibility, they set up two villains and nothing happens with either of them. We get set up with Oscar Isaac's character as being a villain, even though he's like more of like the noble villain. And it's not like he gets defeated. He gets stopped in this moment, but he doesn't get defeated. And then we have Spot. And Spot is clearly going to be a big villain moving forward. And then at the end of the movie, we have like evil Miles and Uncle Ben or Uncle Aaron. So it's like there's a lot of these characters, like there's a lot of villains, but I wish we would have gotten a conclusion on one of them or on some part of them. Because I feel like that is important to these types of movies. Because at the end of the day, when it comes to a superhero movie, a villain needs to be defeated in every superhero movie.
I suppose so. I guess we can't have the villains winning all of them, but...
But they don't even win in this one. Nothing happens. There's no conclusion to either one.
I know. And the issue with Oscar Isaac's character, Miguel, is that he's more of an anti-hero than he is a villain, I would say. A little more harsh, a little more jaded. Is very utilitarian, right? Doing what needs to be done for the greatest result. Spot, first off, Jason Schwartzman is hilarious in this movie. As soon as I heard that voice, I was like, I actually spent a lot of time when I first saw this movie. I was just like sitting there. It's like, I know this voice. Who is it? And then the realization is Jason Schwartzman. It's like, yeah, that's Jason Schwartzman. And he's going full evil and it should be good, but there's no payoff for it. And then they decided to do this introduction of these, of Aaron and Miles in the whatever universe he ended up in. Oh, the spider universe that his spider came from, right?
Because he's not even supposed to be a Spider-Man because it came from the wrong universe.
Yeah, which is cool. I like that story.
Mm-hmm. That's a fun movie. Really like that.
Yeah, but I'm almost okay with it because it is a sequel, or there is a sequel. It feels very Empire Strikes Back.
But even Empire Strikes Back has conclusion to storylines.
That's true. Like,
a lot of conclusions to storylines. This doesn't have a conclusion to really any storyline.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess the only closure we get for a storyline is Gwen's, right?
Yeah, because her dad, it bookends the movie.
Yeah.
So then that's why she goes to the other universe to find, or the other Earth to find Miles.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess you're right. Like, it isn't really a complete film at all.
Yeah, it's a great, like, it's a great looking movie. It's got really good ideas. It's got really good characters, but it's exactly how I felt after Dune Part 1. Part 1 was a movie that had a lot of promise. I was super invested. Half the time, I didn't even know what they were talking about, but I was loving the way it looked. I was loving the characters. I was loving where it was going. And then it ends, and you're like, okay, what was the beginning, middle, and end of that movie? Because I always go back to Lord of the Rings. The Lord of the Rings has a beginning, middle, and end, even though it's its own movie. And then it goes to the next movie and the next movie. They all have a beginning, middle, and end, even if they end on cliffhangers. This movie had a beginning, a middle, and a cliffhanger.
Mm.
It didn't have the ending for our protagonist, which you can make Gwen as much of a protagonist as you want. But at the end of the day, your ultimate protagonist is Miles.
Yeah,
he is your protagonist. And there is no conclusion to his story in this movie. And it's a beginning, a middle, and now I'm in the wrong place.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's why this movie is actually going to... I would be shocked if by the end of this trilogy of films, this isn't the least regarded of them all.
Yeah, I think once the last one comes out, this one will start to kind of dip. It's kind of like Two Towers, right? Once Return of the King closed it, Two Towers became less respected than the other two because it was like, is this based on comics of any type or no? I know it's Spider-Man, but like, is it?
Yeah, it is. It's a very popular storyline from like 2012, 2014.
So there's a Miles Morales story comic out there of Spider-Man.
Oh yeah. Miles Morales has been around since like Ultimates back in like 2002.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, no, this isn't an original character. It was a character that was designed. Honestly, it was because Marvel needed more diversity in their characters.
They did. They did. And you know what? Okay, so here we go, right? Because I was talking about the Eternals at the beginning of this. What I was concerned with when I saw Into the Spider-Verse the first time was, are they just doing it for diversity? Like, is there going to be like is there going to be something more to this character? Because as I said with the Eternals, felt like everything was just like, hey, don't forget, this is Kumail Nanjiani. Like, don't forget. Like, it was like, look at what makes each one of them not white. And I almost feel like they did themselves a disservice by leaning into the fact of, like, when they were marketing it, of like, it's a black Spider-Man. Because there's so much more to it than that. Like, I love the story that we're seeing and Miles's upbringing, his background, his father being a cop and making that movie in 2018, I guess, was when the first one came out, and then keeping that in 2023. And obviously there's so many things with George Floyd because you have the rest in power and those types of things. I just feel like when I watched this movie, I was like, damn, like that's how they're not just, what is it? In Barbie, they have the line of, I heard patriarchy is dead. And the guy says, patriarchy's not dead. We're just better about hiding it now. That's how I feel a lot of times when a movie like The Eternals gets made. That's a movie that is diverse to appease the population. It's not actually being a diverse movie. It's just diverse to appease. They're hiding it that like everybody in control of that movie is whoever. And I know Chloe Zhao directed it. So, okay. But like Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse and Into the Spider-Verse, it really is like the storytelling that goes on around everything makes it make sense. You can't just have people who are like air quotes, anti-woke, air quotes closed, saying, oh, this movie's stupid because it's Black Spider-Man. It's like, no, that's not what this movie is. This movie is about a mistake that happens and how that leads Miles Morales down this path and how he's got to overcome it and how he was never meant for this opportunity anyway. I honestly think the story to the first one is pretty flat out brilliant. And you're not going to hear that from me when in regards to any type of Marvel stuff ever. It's pretty much flat out brilliant.
Yeah, it is. And the identity of Miles is part of his identity. Like the fact that he's Black, the fact that he's Puerto Rican, it plays into his identity and we see it in his character, but it's not the predominant part of his character.
It's not the most interesting thing about him.
Exactly. Because we're seeing a real fleshed out character, a child who is coming into, and it was what was missing with like the Sam Raimi Spider-Mans, right? Is that high school element of Spider-Man, we get that here. We understand, like, despite the fact that Miles is at boarding school or whatever, right? Like, we still get his struggle and the fact that he is a child who has to all of a sudden save the world or, you know, the multiverse.
Yeah. Yeah. And I actually think setting it at boarding school helps it. Because now you have like that, you have to force it to be school related. You have to force those relationships. You force the relationship with his uncle in a totally different way, though, than what we're used to seeing in Spider-Man. Like, I really love all of that stuff. And I like that his uncle's the Prowler. I thought that was a really nice twist. I thought there was a really interesting idea for it of like this guy he's idolizing is actually one of the biggest villains.
Yeah.
I know that's the first movie, but still.
Well, I mean, it's also in the second movie because it's why Earth 42's Miles is the problem, right?
That's true.
So it's all
I'm a big fan. Do you think this is going to win the Oscar, or do you think The Boy and the Heron is going to win the Oscar?
I don't know. There are a couple things I would take into consideration here. Miyazaki has announced that he's making another movie, so The Boy and the Heron is no longer his last movie, so it's not his last chance to win that Oscar anymore. A lot of controversy about the animation studio with this one, though. So I don't know how that's going to impact voting for this category. It's between those two. I know there are three other movies nominated in this category, but they don't matter.
They don't matter. I do feel like more people are going to I feel like because in this category, it's just pick your favorite.
Yeah.
I feel like Across the Spider-Verse is going to be more people's favorites.
Probably. I agree. Yeah. There was like another snub that some people have talked about. I didn't talk about it on our Oscar reactions because I kind of forgot about it. But there was a movie that was animated very similar to Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse that came out this year. The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie.
Yeah, I'm surprised that didn't get any love.
Yeah. So there's a bit of a rumbling about people being like, yo, why didn't this get nominated? Especially when after the studio issues with Across the Spider-Verse came out, it came out that Seth Rogen was very good to the animators for that movie. So it was kind of interesting to see it not get the nom there, especially when there are movies people haven't heard of nominated in this category.
Yeah.
But.
And Elemental.
I said, yeah, that movie was a movie that came out. It's interesting because, like you said, animated movie does feel more like people will just vote for which one they like more, rather than actually thinking about which ones they like more.
And I do feel like there's going to be a lot of people who are going to look at those lists and say, I don't want to watch any of these. I already saw Across the Spider-Verse. I'm just going to vote for Spider-Verse.
That's a good point as well.
And that's what I think is really going to set this back more than anything, is that most people are just going to say Spider-Verse. Yeah. I didn't even watch the others. I'm not going to go find The Boy and the Heron right now, unless you get the screener. Finding The Boy and the Heron, you got to spend $20 to watch it, or go find it in a theater and it's not playing everywhere.
Yeah. Although The Boy and the Heron being released both subbed and dubbed might benefit it, because that dub cast is pretty stacked.
Yeah, that dub cast is great. And then you'll get the people who are pushing that because they're in that dubbed cast. That is a good point.
Yeah.
I think it's Across the Spider-Verse to lose. And like, even though I gave Spider-Verse 3 stars after giving the other one 4 stars, or Across the Spider-Verse 3 stars after giving the other one 4 stars, it's not like I was mad at this movie or disappointed. I just, like I said, just feel like it wasn't complete. I feel like there was something missing, and it ended on a to be continued, and I just wanted more at the end. So for me, it's a solid movie. I enjoyed it. The animation is absolutely gorgeous. But after the animation was absolutely gorgeous in the first one, and the first one had a story that I thought was better too, the second one's got to build off of that. And there were some cool moments in the second one. And then, like I said, once it just started to feel like it was just getting complicated for complicated sake. And then I moved on.
I wouldn't be surprised if Beyond the Spider-Verse ends up getting a Best Picture nom if it's not a tight year like this year.
I think for sure.
Like, I think we could see the third movie in this franchise getting a Best Picture nomination, especially if it's a little weaker. Obviously, this year, Across the Spider-Verse didn't stand a chance. There are much better movies.
Yeah, there's just too many movies. They would have replaced Barbie, and that would have burned the place down.
Yeah, exactly. But it's interesting. Movies like this, like these Spider-Verse movies, really make me excited for the animated medium moving forward. Because... Mm-hmm. Prior to this, it felt like it had gotten kind of stale with just the way that CGI animation was being done. Mm-hmm. And Into the Spider-Verse gave us something different. And now that's
the most comic book movie ever.
Yeah, it is. And the medium allows it to be comic booky, which is so important. And it's why it hits harder than any of the MCU films.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I don't have anything left to say about Across the Spider-Verse. So if you have anything else you want to add in, go ahead.
Nope.
You're good?
Yeah.
All right. Next week, we are moving on. And what's the next movie in the Marvel phases? God, I got a
great question.
I thought I had it up, and then I just checked my thing, and I don't.
Is it Doctor Strange next? I don't know if that's correct.
I'm going up. Hold on. We're here. It is actually Spider-Man No Way Home. Okay, cool.
So there we go. We get more Spider-Man.
Spider-Man No Way Home. And then we're going to do Argyle. John and I didn't talk about this, but it's the biggest
thing. No, I was agreeing. That was my idea too. So we're good.
Yeah, there's no way we weren't doing Argyle. I've seen the trailer 9,756 times. I'm so tired of it. I can't wait to watch the movie so I never have to see the trailer again.
But Sam Rockwell, so it's fine.
Yeah. Argyle and Spider-Man No Way Home. And those will be on... probably next Monday or Tuesday. We haven't completely decided yet. So just keep following us on social media. Become a patron, $5 patrons. We have the $5 Tuesdays going on. February is going to be the best month to become a patron, though, because if you become a $10 patron, not only do you get the $5 Tuesdays, you also get our best picture breakdowns, where we're talking about each of the best picture nominees, their chances of winning certain Oscars, what the movies were like, all of that. We go through pretty much everything, and we just kind of say what their best picture chances are as well. That starts on February 1st with American Fiction, and we'll go through all of them in alphabetical order. So that'll be through the entire month of February and on March 4th. Thank you all so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.